Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hello, and welcome back. Taxation is theft. And if you don't know me, I'm Dan, Taxation is Theft Berman. I'm running for president in 2020. And we just kicked off our campaign fundraising last night. So if you head over to Berman2020.com, that's BERMAN2020.com, you can go make a donation. And of course, one of the main focuses of the platform is taxation is theft. We're going to get rid of the income tax as the first one, and then we'll work our way to the rest of them. Tonight I have with me David William. David's been on the show once before, and he's got some really interesting information about filing taxes and opting out of taxes. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. So without any further ado, David, welcome.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me on again, man.
Absolutely, man. It's always a pleasure. So this is the season. Everyone's out getting ready to figure out what to do about their taxes.
Right. Most people are hiring a tax professional, or I'm an untaxed professional. it's funny. I like to, when I'm on Twitter a lot, I like to, whenever IRS tweets something or somebody like a CPA, I think there's an account that's called IRS Tax Pros, something like that. I think it's a group of accountants or whatever. And they tweeted something about, make sure you get a tax professional who understands all the deductions and the new rules and this and that. And I just retweeted that with my comment, like, make sure you get a tax professional who understands that income does not mean everything that comes in.
Right.
And if you have a tax professional that doesn't understand that, do you really want them handling your taxes?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because, you know, the tax code is so big. And I know there's to anyone who knows about, any sort of the tax honesty movement or tax protest or anything, opting out, they always say, well, I'm just going to trust what the tax man, what my accountant says, because he's right. Certified and he's got all these fancy documents with his name on it. But
right.
I challenge them, if you're hiring an accountant, go to your accountant and ask him how many pages of the actual tax code he's actually read. I don't think you're going to get.
Oh, yeah. They're not. Yeah. They don't really know anything about the law. Their job is to stay up on, all the rules that change each year for like just deductions and things
right.
like that.
And
they take for granted that anything that you bring them is taxable income because you're taking that for granted. And that's really where I start, like, hey, let's not skip over that step. That's entirely the process I do with my clients. It's like, let's look at this information and let's see what this is representing and make sure that you agree with this before you just run off and or even on your own before you just put these things on a return and go, yeah, that's income. Because people don't know what they're talking about. And when I say people can opt out, what I really mean is you can decline to opt in, because that's really what everybody's doing when they file a 1040 every year. You're actually consenting to make yourself subject to taxes that you otherwise would not be subject to. I'll just put it that way.
Right. So
and that's really how it works.
Yeah.
And that's why they have you sign. That's why they need you to sign these documents instead of just sending you a bill. Like, here's what you owe for what you made. Like, why don't they just do it like that if it's a forced tax? Because it isn't. They're secretly getting evidence of your consent, and that's how this whole thing works. But people right. don't realize that. They're too busy, trying to get their refund, or they're caught up in other details, and they don't really take the time to think about the basic assumptions of this whole thing.
Right. It's too complicated. Just send me my check back. I've been there.
Well, yeah, and they set it up that way. You know, they they foisted the income tax on working people starting in the mid-40s, in 1940s. And they've set it up so that they overwithhold. You know, if you put the quote-unquote correct number of withholding allowances on your W-4, you're going to end up getting a little bit of a refund. But only if you first file that return and declare everything as taxable income, and then they give you this tiny little portion back. And you're like, oh, and people are just conditioned to think of that as free money falling out of the sky, which is really just that's a great feat in brainwashing, man. They're taking your money that was your money to begin with, and you don't even think of it as yours. Like, you get your paycheck and you see the gross pay, like, that doesn't mean anything. What's the net pay? Like, what's all that money? What's the difference? What's all that money that's gone
right
from your gross pay? That was your money too, bud. But they've conditioned you not to realize it's your money or think of it as ever having been yours. That's just money that's again, it's great brainwashing, because people think that they somehow magically owe the IRS money as soon as they make some money. And it's hard to work with that level of brainwashing. It really is. It's hard to get people to stop and interrupt that.
Right. Now, some of this also starts with filing of a W-2 or a W-4. Or I guess a W-4 is what you sign with your employer, and that's part of that contract, isn't it?
Well, what a W-4 is, you know, people, I don't know how your audience has probably had some people pretty sophisticated with this stuff. So you'll commonly hear people that protest taxes, you know, that understand there's sort of a contract going on. They'll go, oh, well, when you sign that W-4, then you're under contract. Well, the W-4 really is only an agreement to allow withholding. And the withholding does not itself make you liable for income tax. That doesn't happen until after the year's over and you sign on that line on the 1040 and send that in. That's what finalizes everything. And that's really where you put your stamp on everything that's happened before that. And you're the one making it legally legitimate. That's the part that's why this time of year, I really emphasize to people to check out my free report, ebook, whatever you want to call it. It's available at your site, and I have it available at Twitter. It's just free information, and I think people should check it out before they rush to file another 1040. Because as soon as you file that 1040, you are under contract for that year, and I won't be able to help you. So really what you're doing is you're opting into a contract, and as long as you haven't filed that 1040 yet for any tax year, we can still get you out from under that, any type of presumed contract. Even if you did file a W-4, you know, the W-4 is just an agreement to allow withholding. Some people claim exempt on that so that because they don't want to allow any withholding, and you can do that too. But none of that makes you liable for tax by itself. It's just an advance payment towards what your income tax could be.
Right.
Does that make sense?
So so the link that you're talking about, there's actually a link if you're watching the video now. If you're watching it on your phone, just remember to come back to it later, because it'll stop the video. But if you're on your computer, look under the video and there should be a link, and you can go to that link and you can download a free PDF that's got a lot of this information in there that we're going to be talking about more. So
right.
Let's say, you know, I've got a job, I've been getting paid every month, and they've been withholding money from me. What do I do now? Like, I'm supposed to file a 1040 to get some money back. What are you suggesting that I could do instead?
Right. So what I do, I'll often get clients who are in that position, like they've allowed withholding all last year, and like, well, what do I do now? They already got the money. Well, what you can do going forward is you may be entitled to claim exempt on the W-4, but you have to meet two conditions, and those conditions are listed on the W-4 form. You have to have had no tax liability the previous year. That means you cannot have even $1 of tax liability, or you're not entitled to claim exempt. And so what I always tell people is like, well, you haven't filed your 1040 for last year yet, right? And as long as they haven't, then yeah, they go, right. As long as you haven't yet filed that 1040, you have not yet assessed yourself with a tax liability. So you can say, for now at least, that you do not have a tax liability for last year. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah, I remember.
So you can file. You could claim exempt tomorrow, and you could argue. You can very easily say there's no tax liability yet because you haven't assessed yourself, and the IRS hasn't assessed you one with either. Now, I did recently have somebody, you know, call me. They're like, "Oh, well, I already filed for last year," but they wanted to claim exempt, and I was like, "Well, you can't do that because you assessed yourself with a liability. Like, you'd be obviously saying something false on your W-4. It's already established that you have a tax liability for last year, so you cannot claim exempt. But as long as you haven't done that, you can totally claim exempt. And then the other condition is that you anticipate having no tax liability at the end of this year. And if you're working with me, you should be able to realistically say that, because what I do is I'll do a free evaluation for people and I take a look at what their sources of earnings are and determine if they can opt out or not. And most people can. If you're not working with any type of government connection where they would have a legitimate reason to legitimate basis to tax you, then the rest of it is you're just opting in. All the people working in the private sector or even working for state governments, when you declare what you made as income taxable to federal government, you're consenting to it. There's no they would have no basis to tax you otherwise. But so, does that make sense?
Yeah. So what would be considered? Because you talk about there would be some legitimate ways for them to tax you. What would be some of those ways?
Right. Well, like, for example, I have a married couple that are clients, and the husband is retired and he's living on a Navy pension. So his pension benefits are from the Navy, which is part of the federal government, and that's legitimately taxable. So I can't help him get out of that. In fact, I had him file a 1040, which normally I would recommend people not do. But in some circumstances like that, where all of his income, all of his earnings were from a federal source, he's actually better off filing a 1040 than he would be as like a non-resident alien, for example, because he gets a better tax rate and he can take a standard deduction and things like that. So that's an example. Somebody whose income is primarily from federal government sources is legitimately being taxed. Also, anybody who is a resident alien, someone who's lawfully admitted for permanent residence in the U.S., they live here, they live in the USA as a federal privilege. So those people are subject to tax on all of their income worldwide, because that's the,
that's
like a contract.
That's the contract they sign when they enter the country.
I don't know. It's a
residency
contract that they sign, but by accepting the privilege, they accept the conditions that come with that, and those are laid out in the Internal Revenue Code. So that's public notice of, like, it isn't a contract where, like, here, read this over and make sure you. No, it's a private law, but it's a little bit like if you join the Army, you would be subject to Army regulations. They don't necessarily have you look over everything in the book and make sure that's your responsibility to obey, to understand and obey the Army regulations since you joined the Army. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the public in general is subject to Army regulations. It's only people that have agreed to be a part of that are subject to it. And that's actually a really good analogy for understanding how income tax works. It's this set of private laws that only apply to certain people. That's not to say they don't apply to anybody, because you get a lot of people that argue that, like, oh, nobody's subject to income tax. No, that's not correct. There are people that it's subject to, but it just doesn't apply to everybody as people commonly believe.
Right. Yeah, that's just that it's probably that overgeneralization talk that people just kind of do because it's easier to say.
Sure. right.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know exactly who it does and doesn't apply to, so I'll just say everybody, because let's not make this topic too complicated when I don't know the details.
It's just like the phrase taxation is theft, which I don't really have a problem with, because it's communicating a sense of, injustice and unfairness, which is 100%, it's really accurate. It's communicating that there's something wrong going on here. But if you look a little closer at the income tax, it's not actually being forced on anybody. And that's really important to understand if you want to actually get out from under it, because as long as you don't understand what the real problem is, you can't solve it. And that's why so many people have tried and failed to argue against the income tax, because they were asking the wrong questions. If you don't ask the right questions, you have no hope of getting the right answers.
Right. Absolutely.
That's why I tried to, like, learn from those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. And, this movement's been going on, as far as I know, since the 70s, probably earlier. You know, and people have been trying to figure out how to fight the income tax and just say, you know, some people say I have a moral objection because I don't like funding the wars. Some people have tried saying,
right,
you know, it's unconstitutional. The 16th Amendment wasn't properly ratified. There have been a lot of things that people have tried. But it's, you know, it's not like the IRS, you know, you can't just call them up and say, yeah, I don't want to pay taxes. Is there any way out of it? They're not going to tell you that.
Oh, no, it's not their job to tell you how to get out of it. It's
right.
You're the one. And that's my point, is that you're the one actually putting yourself in it. One of the most shocking things that I teach my clients, like right off the bat, is that that no one is ever required to use a 1040 form as their tax return. Now, that's not to say nobody's ever required to file a return, but no one's ever required to use that form. And I have a federal court that said that, like, very matter-of-factly. Like, you can, a tax return can be done as long as it's got the information that's necessary for them to calculate the tax. It could be, you could do it on a cocktail napkin. It does not have to be on a 1040 form. That's true, yeah. A return is has to do with the substance of a return, not like the form. So a court, at least one federal court has explicitly said, no, there's no law that requires anyone to use a 1040. And that's true. If you go looking in the law, you won't find anything that requires a 1040. So what that means, Dan, is that anybody who does use a 1040 is volunteering for something. You know, they're doing that voluntarily because no law requires the use of that form. So you have to take a closer look at that form and look at what's being represented by what, you know, when you turn that in and you sign that, you go, yes, I believe this is true. You're agreeing to a status that's equivalent to that resident alien status that I talked about before.
That's
like
that's,
somebody who's accepted a federal privilege.
That's really interesting because I think the last time I looked at a 1040, it had a place on there. You were supposed to say yes or no. Did you have health care for the entirety of the year? And of course,
right.
You know, you have to check yes or no. And if you check yes and you didn't, you're lying and you could be guilty of perjury. But if you could write this on another form, right. You might be able to leave that out. I don't know if that's
That's true, because that's a good point, because there's a lot of information they're asking for that may or may not affect your tax liability. And, you know, the courts have gotten into I've had this argument recently with the state FTB about what in California about what constitutes a valid return.
Those
and
guys.
The courts have weighed in on that. Yeah. Like they don't, you know, it doesn't require you to use any particular form. And as long as it has enough information to calculate the tax liability, that's all that's required to make it a valid return. The thing with the 1040, you know, I'm going to say, tell you something that's even more shocking. The form that I recommend for most of my clients is the 1040-NR, and that's for non-resident aliens, which people go, whoa, wait a minute. You're claiming you're not American? No. Absolutely not claiming to be an American. And if you look at any 1040 NR form prior to this year, there's a list on – it has different types of non-resident alien. There's a box that you check to tell them what type of non-resident alien you are, and one of those boxes is U.S. national. Well, that's what Americans are. They're U.S. nationals. That's a term that has been used many times by courts to describe Americans. You know, they just matter-of-factly use that term. So U.S. national – is by default a non-resident alien and could file a 1040 NR return. Now, what's interesting, Dan, is this year, all of a sudden, after 50 years of having these choices of what type of non-resident alien you are, the IRS has removed all those choices from the from the 1040 NR tax form. If you go to it now, it just says single non-resident alien or married non-resident alien. And they don't want – so the law didn't change. It's just they realize there's too many people filing 1040 NR returns and checking that box for U.S. national, and they're American. And the IRS is like, oh, shit, people have caught on. We got to, like, they can't change the laws, so they have to just take it off the form and hope that people will go, oh, well, I guess the law must have changed. No,
so
the law hasn't changed. It's what it always has been.
But you can just kind of create your own version of the 1040, like you said, on any other paper and include all that information, and it wouldn't be filing a 1040.
Yeah.
So you could say non-resident alien.
Yep. Actually, you could say you are correct. There's no reason you have to use a 1040 NR form either. The reason I just as a practical matter, because sometimes you get into what's legally allowed, and then you get into just as a practical matter, we do want to get our return processed. Because one of the things I like to get is get the IRS to accept the return and process it, and then we can get a transcript that proves that the IRS processed the return and accepted what the taxpayer reported on the return. And I think that's very valuable for people to have. If you just send them a statement, it might qualify as a return if you were to battle that out in court, but the IRS in the meantime might not recognize it as a return and they'll just ignore it. Does that make sense?
Right. So you basically would have sent it in, but you might not be processed, and then they can come up with a substitute return or a substitute filing or
well, they might, whatever they might try. I'm just saying. Yeah, I'm just saying it could create some hassles for you that you otherwise could have avoided if you had just used the form, and they would have been. It's kind of like speaking their language. You know, the more you can speak their language without waiving your rights, the better it is for you, because you do want to get your return processed, and then it's over with. I mean, it's extremely rare for any of my clients who file 1040NR to get audited.
And
first thing people worry about. Oh, they get it filed, right, then they're going to audit you, but it almost never happens.
And I would think that, like, the bulk of the IRS people who are kind of inputting these forms, well, I would think, one, a lot of that's automated, and so if it's on a 1040, they can scan it in their computers and do some probably some character recognition to just put it right into their system.
Yeah, they use optical scanners.
Yeah, and if you do something by hand or something that's not the standard form, then that's going to get picked up. They're going to have to do it manually, and that's going to create all kinds of other headaches. That's going to throw you in a separate bin. So yeah, I could totally see that.
You are correct.
Causing more problems.
They're also more likely to flag if you send them a statement. They're also more likely to flag that as a frivolous tax return.
Right.
They might treat it as a return, but then it gets sent to this, you know, their frivolous return center, where they start hassling them, like, hey, you need to send in a correct form, and they don't tell you what that means or what you're supposed to correct. But if you don't do it, they'll fine you $5,000. So there's more hassles that you want to avoid. And those statements that, like, whenever they see, like, something that says, like, statement in lieu of return or something like that, they actually train their people to, like, oh, that's probably one of those frivolous tax protester things.
Right.
So for that reason, too, I try to avoid red flags.
So we know some of the things we shouldn't do. What should we do?
What you should do is, it's interesting. I realized after several years of doing this that I have clients that have been with me for a while that I still, they were still just didn't really have the basis of knowledge that I thought they needed to have. So I started writing like a series of lessons for my client just to try to distill down what they really need to know in order to be comfortable with doing this stuff. So it's hard to answer that in just one sitting. I would just say, like, learn how the tax actually works, which is what I do with my clients. I don't keep anybody in the dark, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth either. Like, what gets filed has to reflect what you sincerely believe, you know?
Right.
It's like if you're going to issue a currency, you know, if you have a currency that's backed by gold, that's a good currency, but it's not backed by anything. Ultimately, it might last for a while, but it's going to be worthless. And that's how I feel about it. If you file something and it's just some word salad that somebody gave you, if you get tested on that, it's not going to work, right? Because it's not backed up by any integrity or what you actually believe. So it's really important for people to learn how the tax actually works. Like I said, you can't really get out from under this contractual way, the way it works, until you understand how you got there. And the way you got there is it starts with, like you said, that W-4, where you allow, you're allowing withholding of tax. And you're also authorizing the employer to report what you were paid as wages. So they have the authorization from you, even though we all know they forced you to fill out the form, right? Like, nobody says, you know, it's not usually your idea when you get hired for a job. Like, hey, aren't you guys going to want to take taxes out of my check? No, they give it to you and it's like, fill this out or maybe you don't want to work here is kind of the idea. So that it doesn't really, it's not really any kind of binding agreement. And I think that is why they created this option to claim exempt on the W-4, because they realized that government, I think, realized that they could be held liable for this, because they encourage employers to think that everybody has to do this, and they don't. But here's the funny part. Like, if you don't claim exempt on a W-4, if you put, like, you know, three allowances or whatever, you're actually consenting to allow money to be taken out of your check. So you don't have any right to complain after that. Yeah, they forced you to fill out the form, but you could have claimed exempt and stopped the withholding, but you didn't do that. Does that make sense?
Right. So now what happens
if... So they set this up so it's your fault. It's your fault that there was withholding, even though you were forced to fill out the form. Ain't that a bitch?
Right. You told me to do it.
Right. But so, again, they give you these little opt-outs along the way, and people are like just conditioned, like, oh, I can't claim exempt. That's not for me. Well, who do you think it's for? You know, why is it an option at all if nobody can use it? You know, it's there. The law allows it, and the law doesn't actually allow the employer to disregard. If you claim exempt, whether they might think you're crazy, but whatever, they can't do anything about it. They have to just not withhold income tax. And now you've got more money in your paycheck.
Right.
So that would be the first start, I think, is just to keep your money with you, because it's a lot easier to keep your money than it is to try to get it back from the IRS. You know, I mean, you can, in theory, claim 100% refund of everything that you had taken out last year, but they're not, as you could imagine, the IRS is not eager to issue checks to people for 100% of their withholding. And if you do that year after year, they're definitely going to notice, and they're probably going to start, you know, refusing, they'll probably refuse to give you the money, force you to take them to court, that kind of stuff. And it's that's a difficult situation. It's easier just to keep the money in the first place.
That's an interesting. Has anyone ever had to take them to court over something like that and have the other ever won?
Well, I think there's a lot of refund cases that were, you know, I think the IRS, here's the thing, the law allows the IRS to just ignore any refund claim they want for 6 months. Okay, so even if your refund claim is perfectly valid, if they want to, they can ignore it for 6 months, and then after that, you have the right to sue. And I think it's hard to say, because these things don't create case law that you can study. But if somebody files a lawsuit for their refund, and the IRS gets and the government gets served with that, and then they cut you a check at that point, well, then your case gets dismissed, right? Or you withdraw the case. And as far as the case law is concerned, it doesn't create any record, but you got your refund. So sometimes you do have to sue in order to get somebody to negotiate with you in good faith. And I'm sure that that goes on with the IRS. There's very few cases in the case law that about refunds. You'll see some. If the IRS lets it go to court, it's probably because they think they can win. You know, like the person made really silly arguments or... You know what I mean?
Right.
There's definitely people, you know, just because you claim 100% refund doesn't mean you're going to get it. You have to, like, the burden's on you to establish that you have a right to a refund. So what I like to do with my clients is we get the return filed first and get IRS to accept that their tax is zero. And once they agree that the tax is zero, well, then I'm entitled to 100% refund of whatever was withheld, aren't I? You know, you already have their agreement on the zero tax. So what are they going to say?
Right. So,
that's kind of how we do that.
Here's an interesting question. I don't know if you'll know much about this, but you mentioned the California FTB earlier. Somebody told me about a case, and I was just trying to research it here. And of course, whenever I search for this, the top sites that come up are like, you know, like blogs and government websites telling me how to pay taxes. But there was this case. Yeah, it's crazy. This case that I was told about was basically there was an individual who had zero federal tax liability, and the way that the states who have income tax, their income tax laws are basically piggybacked on top of the federal law. So whatever you owe, your taxable income is to the feds, that's the same taxable income to the states.
That's right.
But what California did in this case was they tried to say, no, we have records of some taxable income. We don't care if the feds recognize that you had zero taxable income. They must be wrong, and we're going to tax you based on this other amount. Have you heard of anything
like that? That's interesting. I just handled a case that is exactly what is going
on. Maybe you're the one who told me about it.
And it hasn't... Yeah, I probably did. In fact, I mentioned it as something we could talk about, because there's no case ever where that's happened. So that's the argument I made. I was arguing on behalf of a client to it's the Office of Tax Appeals. It's like the equivalent of tax court at the state level. It was like, hey, we got federal determinations here, you know, when you look at the state tax return, any state tax return, it has you enter what your federal adjusted gross income, your federal AGI. That's how you start the calculation, really. So we have, in this client's case, we have federal, we have the IRS agreeing that her federal AGI is like $0 or $1 or whatever it is. So that's what she put on her state return. And like, what else is she supposed to do?
Right.
You know, so, the FTB tried to, they didn't really, in this case, we're going to see how it turns out, but it was really lame. They did not even really address the federal records. They just tried to ignore it because it wasn't convenient for them. But as I pointed out, if the federal records said what the FTB wanted it to say, they wouldn't be talking about anything else. They'd be like, oh, well, look, the federal records prove that she had income. But because they don't say what the FTB wanted them to say, they tried to just ignore it. And so they're relying on this other weaker evidence, you know, because, by the way, I mean, what your employer reports to the IRS or to the state, it's on some level, it's evidence. It's called prima facie evidence. It's just, if it's the only evidence, that's good enough. But it's not, definitely not conclusive evidence, because these people are not experts. They're not really competent to make these legal determinations about like wages and income and things like that. But so it's only good. It's all good as long as you agree with it. But as soon as you don't agree with it, they have a big problem, because that stuff is not conclusive evidence that you had taxable income. And that's why it's so important for people to understand that income doesn't mean everything that came in. So it's not good enough to just go, hey, look, here's a pay stub that proves I paid Dan. That means he had taxable income. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because there's a difference between money earned and what is taxable by the federal government. And like you said, the state piggybacks on that. So what's taxable by the state depends on what's taxable by the federal government. And those are the things that people need to learn to really, really understand. It's something I make sure my clients learn about. I mean, it goes back to, you know.
I think I lost you.
I'm still here. Are you there?
All right. Yep. You just disconnected for a second.
All right.
I got you back.
Oh, okay. What was I saying?
Man, whenever I lose a connection, my mind goes to making sure I get the connection back, and I totally forget what we were talking about.
I was saying there's a difference between what is income and what is not income.
Right.
Not everything that you're paid by somebody else is. And that goes back to the 16th Amendment, which is very misunderstood. Even by judges, like I could tell, even these judges I was arguing to, like the big myth is that the 16th Amendment somehow made us all the slaves of the government, and they can just tax you on whatever money you make. And that is just, not only is that not true, but that's impossible for that to be true, because it would just make every other constitutional restriction just irrelevant. You know what I mean? Like, if we're all just slaves, then what's the point of even having a constitution? They can just decide the tax rate's 100%. And so everybody buck up. You know, it's just the stupidest. If you really think about it, it's the stupidest belief ever that somehow we just voted to, you know, for all future generations have to be slaves of the government now. And they can just, you know, charge you whatever they want.
Well, it makes no sense. We didn't get to vote on it, but that's another story.
Right.
I mean, but even the people who were alive then.
No one can vote away your right.
Yeah. It was their representatives who did it. So it was...
No one has the right to vote away anybody else's rights. That's the whole basis. That's the whole point of having a Bill of Rights in the first place. And, you know, the Supreme Court handled the 16th Amendment because a lot of people, as soon as the 16th Amendment passed in 1913, or let's just say it was declared ratified, there were a lot of legal challenges because people did misunderstand the 16th Amendment, and they were intended to. It was really part of this public sort of brainwashing thing where they wanted to give the impression that everybody had to, they wanted to give the impression that income meant everything that came in. And that's how a lot of people, they took cases to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court had to straighten people out on that. Say, look, the 16th Amendment did not give Congress any new taxing power. I know that's what everybody believes, but it didn't. And the Supreme Court said that multiple times in like the first like 10 years after the 16th Amendment was passed. And one of the things they said is that it didn't repeal. I don't know how good you are on the Constitution, but you know that there's a requirement in Article 1 in the tax power that direct taxes have to be apportioned.
Right.
Right. Okay. So the 16th Amendment did not change that. It didn't repeal that, which means the income tax isn't a direct tax. But everybody thinks it's a that you know, direct taxes, you know, everybody can just be taxed directly without apportionment. I got a really great case that I relied on in arguing against FTV recently. It's Eisner v. Macomber. And the Supreme Court basically said, because there's limits on the federal taxing power laid out there in the Constitution, you have to distinguish between what is and what is not income. And you have to apply that distinction according to truth and substance without regard to form. And that is really just become my all-time favorite Supreme Court quote right there. Because they're saying, like, hey, you can't just take a W-2 that was sent by this guy's employer and go, hey, there you go, this proves you had income. No. Because that person might not know what they're talking about. And that's the whole point of having Dan complete a tax return, so that Dan can make his own determinations about what happened. And if your determinations don't agree with what the employer, you know, says, then the tax agency has a problem. They either have to go with what you say, or they have to go and dig and find some actual evidence to show that you actually did have taxable income, even though you said you didn't.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just looked the case up right now, yeah. And I'm reading the they've got like some highlight quotes from it. What is or is not income within the meaning of the amendment must be determined in each case according to truth and substance without regard to form.
Yes. Isn't that a magical? That's just I just love that quote.
Yeah.
And I just hammered these judges. I was talking to a panel of judges that probably never heard of this case before, even though they handle tax cases all the time. And I just hammered them with this. Like, you don't have any truth or substance in this case. All you have, all the FTB has given you is, and all they've given them is a W-2 from the person's employer and a declaration from, like, payroll clerk who, like, looked at their records and go, yep, that matches what's on the W-2. I'm like, well, none of that proves anything.
Right.
It just proves what these people, it just proves that these people are just repeating what they said before. Like, well, we think it's wages. Well, why do you think it's wages? What was your basis? What did you base this on? And they can't right. answer that question because they just assume they don't make that distinction between what is and what is not in.
And this is, you know, they're
going against what the Supreme Court said.
For anyone listening who's you know, not familiar with the whole process of going to court and everything, things have to be very specific in a very specific way. So one of the first things that's done when a case is filed with a court, and excluding traffic tickets and small claims because, you know, they can skirt the laws on that because no one complains, I guess, is you have a statement of jurisdiction. And within this statement of jurisdiction, it's the very first thing, right? You're filing a lawsuit against somebody or you're filing a criminal indictment.
Right.
The very first thing you yeah. say to the court is, this court has jurisdiction because it happened in this place. It violated this
right.
law. This law applies to this person because this, and they have to list all these different claims supporting that
yeah.
that this matches jurisdiction. And
yeah, and especially in federal court. If you sue in federal court, you have to be very specific about why the federal court has jurisdiction. Like, hey, I'm from this state and he's from that state, and so because of diversity jurisdiction, the federal court has to hear our case, you know?
Right.
So federal's even more specific than that. Right. Go on.
Yeah. So if you basically, you know, it's the same thing. You can just walk into a courtroom with a case and say, here's a case. I'm suing this guy. And they're going to say, well, hold on. What makes you think this is even the right place to sue that person? And it's very much the same when you
right.
present evidence. When you present evidence, especially if the police are presenting evidence against you in a criminal case, there's the whole chain of custody. Like, all like there's very,
right.
very specific information. So I can totally
right.
see what you're saying about, you know, if you walk into a court and the IRS says this guy has income, like the burden of proof is on them to prove that it's income. And they would have to either cite a specific law that says, okay, income includes this money that was given to him because he worked. And they'd have to say why they have jurisdiction over that money and that transaction and everything else.
Well, you're on the right track. I mean, what they do with the federal tax cases is they give so much of a presumption of correctness to the IRS. Like, and this is why, you know what, this is why filing a return is really important. Because if you look at the case law, you'll see probably 90% of the tax protesters, at least, basically are people that don't file returns. And some people, like, really just think of that as being one and the same. Like, somebody who, you know, is a tax defier, that means they don't file a tax return. Well, I get some clients that are used to thinking that way, and I'm like, no, actually, you're going to file a return here because it's the best way to protect your rights. You have to put your own determinations on the table, or they don't have to take you seriously. And that's what happens to people that don't file, is that the IRS can do a substitute for return anyway. They can assess tax with you just based on whatever information they got, which might just be a W-2 from your employer. Now, that's crappy evidence, but if it's the only evidence, it's going to be good enough. Does that make sense?
Right. So you
people go into court against these things and they haven't filed a return, and the court is like, why should we listen to anything you say? You didn't even file a return. If you were really serious, you would have filed a return and put your money where your mouth is, but you didn't do that. So they don't listen to these people, and so the IRS doesn't have to prove anything because they've already proven it with this crappy. All they got to have is like, well, here's a W-2. It says this guy had income, and you actually haven't done anything to dispute that, no matter how much you argue. You know, people think it's just an arguing contest. Like, you go into court, well, you know, 16th Amendment wasn't right. Like, they're not going to listen to that. The evidence says that you have a tax liability, so shut up and pay your tax. That's their attitude. Like, there's no way you're going to argue out of that.
Or what at you least can to do, dispute though, it. Like,
go ahead.
There's so, like, I've seen.
Yeah, you have to dispute the evidence. You have to dispute the evidence. You can't. Just make legal arguments.
I've seen, like, you know, even on Judge Judy, right? Like, you know, all these people who think they're lawyers, they come into the courtroom and say, you know, okay, well, this happened. And what they'll do is they won't deny that something happened. They'll just say, yeah, but this and this and that. And they'll start, like, trying to answer all these other questions. And they'll never directly deny, if they say, like, that never happened. They won't come out and say that never happened. And that means they're basically not denying it. And the court has to accept that, well, if you're not denying what this person said, then you're accepting that what they said is true. I've even seen judges like try to lead a defendant into saying, like, so are you denying this? And they won't even say, yes, I'm denying it, because they don't know. They just go on about, like, no, but this and this and this, and just say you deny it. It's it's so important and so simple, but if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, you got to know the rules of the game you're playing, and people very often go into court and don't. They just think it's an arguing contest, and then they complain that the courts are corrupt, where a lot of the time you can actually see the judge tried to help them, and they just didn't know enough about what they're talking about. So, like, when we're talking about tax cases, you know, usually people do come in with they don't think to dispute the evidence, that's where they go wrong. Like, what I do is, like, pretty much all about disputing that evidence, because that's all they have. And, you know, this goes back to something else that people tend to believe, Dan. They think that the IRS can just decide that you owe tax for no reason, and that, oh shit, I guess I owe tax now. That's not how it works. They always have to have evidence,
right? Because, like, when you get the substitute in the mail. And I went through that. Like, they sent me a substitute, and I was just like, well, fuck, what do I do? What can I do?
But they base that substitute for return on information they got from your employer or somebody else that paid you. They didn't just pull out of their ass like a substitute for return and decide that Dan owes, you know, however many thousands of dollars in tax. They have to have some type of basis. And it doesn't, as we've talked about, it doesn't even have to be a very good basis. But if you don't challenge it, it's going to be good enough. But that's how that works. And if you understand how flimsy this whole system really is, you can start to see, hey, man, I really could, like, get out of this, because it's really flimsy. All the people that are reporting that you had income, they don't have any idea what they're talking about. They don't. They've never read the law. They just assume that if they're paying you money, that, oh, it must have been wages then. They have zero clue what they're talking about. But that's going to be good enough, especially if you agree with it. I mean, that's where most people are going wrong. They're just going, like, well, guess I got to put that on my 1040 then and file that. Like, why are you agreeing with this stuff when you don't know what you're talking about? Everybody understands the tax code is complicated and this and that. One of the main things I talk about in that free ebook that people should go check out is how to determine if you're required to file a return. Like, how to really determine it. Don't just assume it. You know, we're going to start with no assumptions, and we're going to take a look at what the definition of gross income actually is. And when you read the law, you can see that, wow, I don't think I know how to even figure out if I have income. It's so just vague, you know, and ambiguous. And that's not, that's a due process of law requires that we have laws that are easy to understand for common people to understand. You shouldn't have to have, you know, 6 years of law school, or, you know, you shouldn't have to have a law degree to be able to see what the law requires of you. And that's one of the biggest flaws in the tax law. But it doesn't stop people. See, the law doesn't really matter if you just blindly fill out a 1040 and file it, right? You just made the law irrelevant because you just consented to all of it.
Right. It's, yeah, I mean, it really is like, you know, when you go to a website and you click, I agree, like, you know, without even reading anything, you're just saying, you know what, screw it. I want access to this. I want my return. You're agreeing to all kinds of terms that you don't really know what's in there. And that can be used against you later. But what's really interesting, you know, so what you're talking about, you know, as far as looking at the law, like that's actually a really, interesting thing, because a lot of conversations I have with people, they're already under the assumption that their money is taxable, that their income is taxable.
Right.
And so when you point the laws out, they say, you know, a confirmation bias. No, it says right there, see, all income, or it says, you know, whatever.
Yes.
But right. Here's the thing.
Your confirmation bias.
If you change your mindset a little bit and think, okay, this money is mine. I earned it. Now, if I have to pay it, I should be able to read those codes, and those codes should absolutely convince me that I have to pay that tax. And if you start with that,
that's
with
right.
that opposite mindset.
Right. Yes, and that's how the Supreme Court explained it, too. When you're talking about taxing statutes, that the language of the law has to be unequivocal, they say. You know, it has to impose a clear requirement, a clear and unequivocal requirement. And if there's any doubt in the language of the law, guess who gets the benefit of the doubt? You do. It goes against the government and with you. You are absolutely correct. People just one of the first things I try to do with clients, I told you I got a lesson series. The very first lesson is I try to start to flip their paradigm. The question is not why you don't have to pay a tax. The question is why do you? You know, you don't have to prove that it's not wages. Like, why is it wages? Why is the guy who's saying that what you received is wages? And I just be clear for everybody, wages is a statutory term. It's defined in the Internal Revenue Code. It does not mean the same thing as the common word wages that you just use in conversation. Okay. So when somebody determines that it's wages as it's defined in Internal Revenue Code, how did they decide that? What was their basis for that? That's the question you should be asking instead of trying to prove a negative. It's very hard to prove a negative, and you shouldn't try, you know, like prove you're not a murderer. You can't do it. If you think I murdered somebody, then let's see you make your case. The burden's on you. If somebody sues you, you know, prove that you didn't damage my car. You know, why don't you prove that I did? You know, whatever it is. So we got to put the burden of proof, at least in our minds. Like, think of your mind as a courtroom, and forget about, you know, people immediately jump to like, oh, well, I'm going to have to go and argue to a judge all this stuff. No, just forget about that for now. The first thing you have to do is make your own determination before you fill out a tax return. A tax return is your, if you imagine a courtroom in your mind and you're the judge, and the tax return is going to be your opinion, your decision that you've made. You're going to look at all the facts, you're going to apply the law, and you're going to make your determination, and you're going to report that determination to the IRS. The law makes you the judge of these things, at least initially.
So,
and you have every right to do that, but people are skipping over that part completely.
Right. So this is really interesting, because we always make the analogy of the Matrix, and we've actually got, for your picture up here, we've got Neo from the Matrix blocking all these bullets. And this is actually very, like, I mean, that's exactly what you're talking, because, like, for Neo in the movie, right, he had to get it inside of his head that he was inside of a simulation before he could start to bend the rules of the simulation. He needed to actually understand, you know, we're always in that mindset. We always have to get our head straight before we can, you know, determine that we're going to do something and then go ahead and do it. But you made an interesting comment about this before. What did you say?
I said, well, you know, I use that Neo stopping all those bullets, you know, as my avatar on my Twitter page. And people always assume that I'm representing that I'm Neo. Like, no, you're Neo. You're the one that I'm trying to convey the information to. You can stop the bullets. I'm Morpheus, if anything. I'm just trying to show you the power that you have. This is a power that everybody has. My favorite line, you know, from the Matrix about that is when he goes, what are you saying? You're saying I can stop bullets? He goes, no, Neo, I'm telling you that when you're ready, you won't have to. You don't have to stop bullets when you realize, the bullets aren't even real. And a lot of the things that people worry are going to happen to them here's the other thing. People think they can just be thrown in jail if they make the IRS mad. You know, I'm sure the IRS is furious with me.
It's, you know, like,
but I'm not in jail.
It's, I get that a lot, because of course I'm walking around with this giant taxation is theft hat on, And
oh yeah,
you know, people stop me all the time, and like some people, like they come up to me and they just kind of whisper, and they're like, "Hey, I just want to shake your hand. I like the hat, or I like the shirt if I'm wearing the shirt." And like there right. are so many people who are like, they want to say it, they're yeah. scared to even express it to their friends and family, because like their friends yes. and family are going to turn them into the IRS and say, you know, "Oh, I think this guy's not paying his taxes. He's my best friend, or he's my son, but I got to do the right thing and turn him in." People are right. legitimately scared about that. And it's like, this is, yeah, for the most part, it's all just fear. I will say there are a couple people who I think have been put in jail over this, but that's not like legitimate jailing, and that's not everybody that they're going to do.
Well, like, that's a good point. It's kind of where I've gotten to where I'm at. You know, I'm aware of people always go like, "Oh, what you're saying is kind of like what Irwin Schiff used to say."
Right.
No, not really. Like, Irwin Schiff was an early pioneer, God bless him, rest his soul, but he never saw that it was a contract going on. So he kept arguing about the Constitution, and he kept losing, because the Constitution is irrelevant when you have a contract. You know, like, when you sign a contract for your job, do you have free speech at your job? No, you don't. And nobody's violating your First Amendment rights. It's because you're there to do your job, and your contract trumps your constitutional rights, right?
So do you think Irwin was
faster?
Well, no, I mean, it totally makes sense. But so do you think Irwin's trial was a legitimate trial?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, look, they didn't do him any favor. Now, I'm not going to pretend that we have like an honest system, because the taxes are the federal courts are there partly to protect the income tax. So they're not going to help you out.
Right.
They're not going to get in there and go, "Oh, what you should have done is disputed the W-2 and said you don't think this is wage." They're not going to it's not their obligation to tell you how to win your case. But yeah, legally, whenever he was charged with tax evasion or this or that, a jury found him guilty of willfully evading tax. So that's you can't blame the courts for that, really, if a jury finds that the guy's guilty. You know, you can say, well, they picked a jury that's brainwashed, and maybe you're right about that. But I will say legally, I will say legally, he was in breach of what was presumed to be a contract. I mean, he was convicted several times, so it's hard to generalize about his things, but
he kept
coming back with like the same type of argument. He created the zero return, where you file a tax return with just nothing but zeros, which seems like a really smart idea, except they just decided, well, you know, this doesn't really show an honest attempt to comply with the law. You're kind of jerking our chain here, which there's a point to that. But what if your income really is zero? What are you supposed to do?
Right. Well,
you know what I mean?
Their assumption is we have these W-2s and the numbers don't match with your zeros. So we're going to assume you lied
That's an interesting issue. Yeah. That's an interesting legal question, because there's a difference between like what makes a return valid and what makes a return correct. And when you're trying to determine if a return is valid, you're not allowed to look outside the face of the document. So when they say a return is frivolous, for example, that means that it's on its face frivolous. They're saying you can tell it's not valid just looking at it. So that's a little bit higher. So I don't think that a return with all zeros automatically is an invalid return. And if they're saying his return was not valid and they weren't going to accept it, it wasn't because they had other information. It's because they looked at the face of the document itself and go, okay, you're just jerking our chain here. You're not giving us any information. And usually these frivolous returns, people make constitutional arguments on them too. That's really what tells the IRS that this is not an honest or reasonable attempt to comply with the requirement to file a return, right? Like if all the entries, you just say, "I don't have to tell you that because screw you," you know,
or
the Constitution says I don't have to answer that. That's not an honest return, and they can label that as frivolous. But, you know, the larger point I was making is I've really studied like what happened to Schiff and a lot of other people's. I've studied the arguments that have not worked, looked at the reasons why things didn't work, and that's how I started to piece together what's really going on here. You know, they're not going to spell it out for you, but there is a contract, and that's why the Constitution's irrelevant. Have you seen the cases, Dan, like all the cases where, you know, the court will just say the Constitution's not relevant here, especially in some of Irwin Schiff's cases?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds crazy, right? How can you say the Constitution's not relevant? Well, it's not relevant. It's just like it's not relevant in your traffic court case either. because you have a license and that creates a contract and you're under the terms of that contract. The Constitution has nothing to do with it. That's all they're saying. It's just like at your job, the Constitution is not relevant at your job either because you have a contract and that contract does not afford you. You can't just stop doing your job and start standing making political speeches to your coworkers
and still get paid.
right. They're like, get out of here, dude. Go exercise your free speech on your own time.
Right.
When you're on our time, you do your job. So that's really. And the cases where people get the IRS loves to trot out this list of frivolous positions every year that have been shot down. And I always get people sending me links to that on Twitter, and it cracks me up because they'll just send the link with like no comment. Like, oh, okay. Like what point are you trying to make by sending me this link? Because there's like a gazillion arguments there. Like, which one are you focused on? But the idea of the frivolous argument list that IRS puts out is the message they want you to get from that is that resistance is futile. It doesn't matter what you say, you will lose. That's really what they want you to take out of that. But that's really just because they're cherry picking cases where somebody came in and just made a silly argument. And there's plenty of cases like that. And mostly, even if you make a valid argument, like something like, hey, income doesn't mean all that came in. Like, you can't make that argument if you haven't disputed, like, the W-2, for example. Like, if you didn't file a return, there's literally no argument you're going to be able to make to prove that you're not liable for tax because they have evidence that says you're liable for the tax. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's hard for people to understand that. But, like, the evidence says you're liable. It's like if the evidence says you're guilty of the murder, you can't say, well, the definition of murder is a little ambiguous, I think. No, that's not going to work. The facts say that you committed this murder, so you're going to be found guilty. So unless you have some some way of showing that that evidence is, not valid, that we shouldn't be relying on that, then you're going to lose your case. And that's what's going on with most of these frivolous arguments, that people haven't even addressed the evidence. They just go right to making legal arguments that they think are going to, the judge is going to go, by golly, you're right. This whole income tax thing is just a fraud. Everybody just make the same argument this guy I made, and you won't have to pay taxes ever again. Like, are you kidding? You think they're going to make it that easy?
Right. Yeah.
but people get like excited and think, oh, this one's going to bring down the house.
Yeah. Right.
And they go,
I finally found it.
And like, right. It's like, if you have a credit card bill, for example, that you haven't paid, and you get taken to collections and it goes to court, there's literally no argument that you can make other than, like, if you said, well, this is fraudulent, that would be a valid argument, right? Like, hey, I didn't do these charges.
I never had a card,
but
yeah.
If you just go in, yeah, but if you just go in there going, well, you know, the credit cards, they're not giving out real money, and you're making all that, you're not denying that you ran up the charges, and so there's just literally nothing you're going to be able to say to. No judge is going to let you out of a contractual agreement, because it's the foundation of our civilization. Is like that people have to do what they agreed they would do. And even if you, like you said, you signed something that you didn't understand and you agreed to make yourself subject to tax, well, that's just too bad for you. You should have read, you should have looked before you leaped. You know, that's what, how the eyes of the law sees that. Like, you're a sovereign, you have freedom, you're a free agent, you are, it's your responsibility to, you're presumed to know what you're doing, even if you don't know what you're doing.
So,
and that's what I try to do, is just help people know what they're doing.
Here's an interesting, I guess this is kind of going a little bit divergent from topic, but
okay.
There are certain contracts that, so like, let's say, for example, you have a charity and I sign a contract with you agreeing to pay $500 to your charity for nothing in return. And you don't give me anything in return, and I don't give you the $500. You couldn't really sue me for $500 because that contract would just be kind of like, okay, well, there was no compensation given for, there was no exchange. You don't have any actual harm by non-performance on that contract. So what's interesting is if you apply that.
Oh, you're saying there's no consideration. You're saying there's no consideration given to you by the income tax by agreeing to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're going to say like, oh, well, we defend him with the military and we gave him roads. They're probably going to bring that up, but.
Well, here's the thing. It's a contractual obligation, but that doesn't mean it's a contract. What I mean by that is when you file the 1040 and you assess yourself with tax, there's actually a line that says amount you owe, you're creating a liability for yourself.
I see.
And once that liability exists, it doesn't matter how you got there. the liability just speaks for itself. Does that make sense?
Right. So that's, yeah, so that's no longer like a, that's not in exchange for, that's just a liability.
It has nothing, because you could have, you know what, you could have assessed yourself with zero tax, maybe. Or really what you're doing when you file the 1040, like I said, this whole thing is, it's predicated on, the only thing federal government really does have jurisdiction over is its own officers and, you know, it's, and corporations that are controlled by the federal government. So what you're doing when you file a 1040 is you're basically agreeing to be treated as though you're a federal officer. It doesn't make you a federal officer, but you're agreeing to be treated as though you are one. Okay. So it's almost like a charity. You're right. It's very much like I'm agreeing. I wouldn't ordinarily have to pay this. And they assume you know what you're doing. So even if you don't, that's no excuse, because nobody, like I said, there's no law that requires a 1040. So when somebody uses that form, it's assumed they know what they're doing, and that's it. You create the liability. You basically put yourself in the income tax core for at least that tax year, and you can make a new election the next year. You know, like every year you're making that determination all over again. So it's not even a thing where you can claim that, oh, I signed this thing and now they're treating me like I'm a slave. Nope, it's a 1 year commitment to treat everything that you made as though it's taxable by the federal government. And that's what you're agreeing to when you file a 1040. So it doesn't matter if there's no consideration or anything. There are benefits to being this thing called a U.S. person as opposed to a non-resident alien, because they give you a standard deduction, and then they give you you get like a better tax rate. You can do married filing joint returns. There are some benefits that you could point to, but I don't take those as like, that's not the benefit you're being taxed on. That's just, to me, that's just evidence that it's a contract. You know, because,
right,
you know, the graduated. Go ahead.
Those benefits are irrelevant if you have no tax liability in the first place.
That's true. Exactly. So it gets a little circular there. But, you know, but I point to those things really not to make that point, but I just show people like, hey, this is evidence that this is all contractual, because there's nothing in the Constitution that allows for graduated tax rates. Like, oh, if you make this much, it's 10%. Then it's 15 if it's over this, and then it's over this. That is a contractual thing going on there. And so is, by the way, when your paycheck, when you get taxed five times on the same money, you're paying federal income tax, you're paying state income tax, you're paying Medicare tax, you're paying Social Security. Where in the Constitution does it say you could be taxed five times on the same money? It doesn't say that anywhere. So that's how we know this is a non-constitutional tax. It's something else. It's contractual. It's not a violation of the Constitution. It's just outside of the realm of the Constitution. It has nothing to do with it.
Right. And if they can do that, where can they stop? I mean, like, imagine there's literally nothing to stop them from increasing these taxes to 110%, which literally means you work for 1 hour and now you owe money to the government. Like, there's nothing to stop them.
They've always calibrated the tax rates to they're just low enough that people don't revolt.
Right.
It really is. It's the same amount of, that's how they set the amount of speeding tickets. You know, it's just the amount so that X percentage of people, most people won't fight it. They'll just pay it rather than hassle with it.
Right.
You know, it's very much that, because it's a huge scam, dude. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's a scam on the public for the last 100 years. And it's about time that we just, I think people, you know, when taxation is theft and messages like that are spreading around, it's a sign that people are waking up, that they're getting, you know, they may not know exactly how, but they're no longer like, oh, I pay my taxes and fair share and we're going to, you know, build the roads and, you know, that kind of stupid stuff that people have just bought into for decades that has kept it going. But it's about time people started looking for ways out. And really, if enough people just, I don't recommend that people just refuse to file a return, but many people do. And tens of millions of people do. And if everybody just did that, it would be very hard for them to. They don't have the manpower to go after everybody.
Absolutely.
That's not what I recommend anybody individually do, but I'm just making that point.
Yeah.
That they don't have the manpower to go after everybody.
Absolutely.
All right. Yep.
Well, we're at about time for the show, but. You know, I do want to, so the best way for people to get more information from you is what, going on Twitter?
They could go on Twitter at No Thanks IRS, and I have a download there, but, or go to your site, which maybe you want to give that. It's got a, If they give their email address, right? I think that's still up there.
That's in the description for the video.
Right. And that's got introductory information. The main goal of that is not any type of exhaustive, like, here's everything you need to know about income tax. But it does help you get started on, like, on determining whether you actually are required to file or not, and strongly encourages you to just think twice before you. What I tell people this time of year is, if you haven't filed yet, maybe think about getting an extension. That gives you until October to just think about this a little bit and just slow down. And that's usually enough time for my first-time clients to get through, you know, my lesson series and stuff. By the way, that report has my email address, so if anybody wants a, you know, to get a free evaluation. This time of year, I get really busy, so I can't always promise I can do that for everybody. But what I'll do is I'll look at your information and tell you, you know, here's what your taxes would be otherwise, and tell you if you can, to what degree you can probably opt out of those. And then from there, what you do is up to you. It's not easy to do this on your own if you don't have any background with it and stuff, but most people hire a tax professional to handle their regular taxes. So I would recommend finding somebody who has some experience with this stuff if you're going to try to do this on your own. You know?
Awesome. Okay, cool. So there's plenty of information there. And one thing I will say is, you know, if you get the PDF and it looks, you know, a little bit overwhelming, because there is a lot of information there, think about it this way. It's, you know, it might take you a weekend to read through it and really understand it, but think about how much money that's going to save you over the next year, 5 years, 10 years. It's totally worth it. So awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show and thanks for talking about this. This is really, I think, you know, I want to keep having you on. I know you've been on before. This is, I think, like the most information, the most important information that people really need to have, because, you know, this is a big scam and we really need to figure out how to stop paying into it. So that, you know, if we believe we're forced into it, then we are basically slaves to the government and everything we earn is theirs. And that makes absolutely no sense. And that's not what a free country looks like.
Well, I'll tell you, man, beyond just the money savings, that's usually what it makes it easy on paper for people to go, oh, yeah, maybe I'll give this a shot. I can't tell you how exhilarating it is to just basically exercise your rights in this way and have the IRS recognize it. That's really what I do that's different from what other people do. We actually get the IRS agreement on what your tax liability is, and we're not hiding from them or anything. This is actually goes against the grain with what most people do. They're trying to, you know, we'll call them tax defiers. Most tax defiers are non-filers, where I actually recommend filing a return, because there's no reason to hide from them. You got the law on your side. You have the facts on your side. There's no reason we can't just go right up to their door and knock on it and go, hey, I didn't have any tax liability. What do you think about that? Which is basically what we do. And they go, yeah, okay, we got nothing. That's pretty much what they do. Because they know. They do know.
Yeah.
At the top levels, they do know. They recognize what we're doing. And there's nothing they can do about it except try to keep it quiet.
Great. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again for coming on the show. Everybody go check out those links, get the information, follow David on Twitter, @NoThanksIRS. And we'll see you again. And until then, taxation is theft.
Yeah, man. Let's do it again sometime. Talk to you soon.
All right. Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.